You're listening to CKMS 102.7 FM in Wattle, Ontario, radiowattle.ca on the web. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access the recordings of this show on radiowattle.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website. I'm your host, Ivan Angelovski.
The next item is number 3, and it's a notice of motion from Councillor Ioannidis about a...
This is Kitchener's Mayor, Barry Rabanovic. On May 11, Kitchener City Council endorsed a motion proposed by Councillor Bill Ioannidis, urging the provincial and federal government to start talking about the idea of universal basic income.
Therefore, be resolved that the Council of the City of Kitchener urges the Ontario provincial government to pursue a partnership with the federal government for the establishment of a universal basic income.
The proposal passed with 8-3, which means it's now an official document of the City of Kitchener.
I've had this idea about this, I've known about this for many, many, many years.
And this is Councillor Bill Ioannidis, who made the proposal.
With the way the pandemic was unfolding and concern about how the way we're going to get through this pandemic, what would be the best options for us to move forward? In a position of being elected official, you're always reluctant to, when things are really seem good and rolling good, you don't want to make drastic changes because it, you know, it just may upset a lot of people and it may not make sense at the time. So when we're looking at a time when we're under a lot of stress economically, on all these job losses, how are we going to serve all these people? And I saw how the federal government and the province were providing funding relief to two people. And granted, I think they've done a great job. And it's definitely on the fly. But I think moving forward, I think we need to look at something better with all the services that we have for social services that, you know, let's move forward and do things better than what we were doing before. I think it played out really, really well. It ended up getting 8-3 vote. Some think it was at the right timing. Others think it should be a little more narrow focused. I personally wanted to have it a little more open so that there's a latitude to make maneuverability among whoever's making these decisions and to work with it. But overall, I think it was well received. What I hope will happen is... It was clear in the motion that it was to notify all the municipalities within Ontario and Ontario Association of Municipalities and the Prime Minister and all of the MPs that the City of Kitchener passed this motion for them to look at this program. And what I'm hoping is that there's some momentum will build up in other municipalities who have similar values or similar ideas of helping their residents out will want to pass motions themselves, hopefully building a momentum so that the upper levels of government can see that, wow, there's a movement for this. And I think right now we're already at it at some point right now, like with all the relief programs, we're almost there anyways. So it's just a matter of formalizing it and doing more tweaking, and with those tweakings it'll create efficiencies and save more costs as well.
Now, since COVID-19, a lot of people in Canada started to talk about universal basic income as a way forward. Now, Canada has a long and troublesome history with the idea of universal basic income. It goes back all the way to the 60s. The last attempt with it was in 2018 with the Ontario Basic Income Pilot during Kathleen Wynne's government. The idea was to test whether basic income is a better way of providing social assistance to those who need it. 4,000 people from Brantford, Thunder Bay, Lindsay and Hamilton volunteered to participate. It didn't end well.
I was living in Hamilton. I still am living in Hamilton.
This is Jesse Golem, one of the participants from Hamilton.
was renting a house. I had roommates, and I still am in this situation. But back then, I had four jobs, and they were all contract work, all very precarious, all gig economy, no protections, no benefits whatsoever, and all minimum wage. So I was still going to another job. I wasn't home till late at night. Didn't have time to make dinner at my house. And basically, my home was a place where I showered and slept. So it was a very stressful existence. I was literally just, you know, browsing Facebook or something like that on my phone. And I saw an article talking about the basic income pilot. And it said that they were accepting people to sign up for this pilot. And the only criteria was that you had to live in like either Hamilton, Lindsay or Thunder Bay. And you had to be making less than $30,000 a year. And I fit both of those criteria. So it was very, spur of the moment. I was like, oh, hey, I could do this. So my roommate and I went to an information session. We signed up for the pilot, in December of 2017. And then in February of 2018, I found out that I had been approved to be a part of the pilot and that I would be receiving a basic income. I was getting a basic income of about $700 a month. So I was still working. But I dropped down and, quit a lot of those contract and gig jobs because then I finally had like that amount of money, which wasn't a lot. It covered my rent. It basically did, but it didn't cover the rest of my bills or the rest of my monthly expenses. But I was still able to work. So I had that free time and put it all into photography and all into business. And I was seeing my business grow. I was booking clients more and more regularly. And I was like getting something very much started. And I was very excited about it. I developed a business plan and I even like had a financial projection that I would have only been on the basic income pilot for 2 out of the 3 years because at that point I would have been making enough money that I wouldn't have needed the basic income pilot. So, and in fact, when I was seeing this happen and seeing my business grow, I was actually making more money by quitting those gig and contract jobs and pursuing my photography business than I was when I was locked in those jobs. I was furious. So I saw the election happening and it felt very clear to me that the Liberal government wasn't going to win this election. The popular opinion of Kathleen Wynne at that time was quite low. And I also saw that every single other party that was running had said, including Doug Ford and including the Conservative government, they had promised not to cancel the basic income pilot. They actually went on the record, made an election promise. I was still deeply, deeply skeptical, despite him making that promise, because I thought if any government is going to cancel this pilot, it will be the Ford government. But he wouldn't be so stupid as to make an election promise and then break it. But then he did, and he did so very, very suddenly. It was one of the very first things he cut after coming into office. That was the moment where I thought, I can't be a photographer anymore. And I put my business on the shelf and just left it there. And so then I directed that fury into my photography and decided to produce a portrait series. So I went and I found other basic income recipients and I started taking pictures of them, holding cardboard signs and writing out on the signs in their words what they used the money for. And then those photos started to gain traction and I was able to travel all across Ontario, even all the way up to Thunder Bay to get photos of basic income recipients up there. And the photos have very much taken over my life and has put me on this incredible journey where I'm now an advocate for basic income in many basic income networks in Canada, as well as all over the world. Last year, I exhibited the photos at the Basic Income Conference in New York City and the Basic Income Conference in India. And this year, I was set to go to Australia to exhibit the photos at a basic income conference there. Obviously, because of the current situation, that's not happening. We see this Canada Relief Benefit, but a lot of people are falling through the cracks in that relief benefit, especially in Ontario, like people on Ontario Disability Support and OW. Like they're making less than half of the amount of what the Canada Relief Benefit is. So there is like this like feeling of outrage and anger and sort of this, like, if the government believes that a living wage that a person needs to survive in emergency times in a pandemic is $2,000 a month, then why are the most vulnerable people in our society expected to live on less than half of that? Why do we claim that we're a progressive, wonderful country when there is this very, very clear and blatant double standard?
This was Jesse Golem, one of the participants from Hamilton. Jody Dean from the same city also volunteered for the program.
Before the pilot, I was newly married. Prior to the pilot, I was a single mom of three. I had been divorced several years and very low income. Worked some precarious work for several years until my daughter got sick, and then was a completely stay-at-home mom. My daughter has a very rare form of osteogenesis imperfecta. It is a genetic mutation to the LRP5 gene. So it creates her to have a lot of different issues. One, the biggest one is brittle bones. So she breaks very easily. It's created epilepsy, migraines, and something very rare called migra epilepsy. And due to the broken bones in her back and whatnot, she's developed scoliosis, and she has an issue with the canals in her back narrowing, so she has what's called spinal stenosis as well. She has daily needs that don't allow me to work a regular job. I get called, it could be several times a month for her to leave school because she's fallen, broken something, had a seizure. No employer would want to keep me on full time, and that's understandable. When we first applied for the treatment, I had been recently married, and my husband works full time, and we still qualified because working full time, we still fell into the low income bracket. I was skeptical. The idea to me was amazing, but I was skeptical that, obviously it was going to be something that worked out. But given the push, we tried, applied, and we were accepted. It was not a lot of money while my husband was working, but during the time that we were receiving it, my husband got injured. And then he had a health issue, and he needed surgery. So he went off work. And it was what kept our mortgage paid. It's what kept food on the table for us during that time. When this happened, we went and gave the information to Basic Income, and they supplemented the amount that he was missing. So they increased our basic income amount that at least we could pay the bills. And that's what we survived on. And when the pilot ended, it was pretty tough, to be honest with you. It was a big adjustment for us because it ended before he went back to work. But at least we had the knowledge that it was ending, so we could prepare a little bit. The way that I look at it is, if we had the basic income pilot right now, there would be no need for the SERP. There would be no need for anybody to be struggling if the basic income pilot was implemented and everybody had a basic income. Basic income doesn't stop people from working. It just gives you the security to know that if something does happen, you've got that protection. Like with the COVID, he's gone on furlough. What happens? You know, you just kind of wait. SERB stepped in. It protected us. It's not going to last forever. We don't know when he'll go back to work because he works in an industry that's it's hard to say right now. He's in sales, so it's hard to say for him whether he'll be going back in the next month, 2 months. We don't know. Everything is very inconsistent. We have no idea what to expect. Had we had a basic income, all this influx with SERB would not be happening. There would be no worries about the fraud that seems to be a big question right now.
This was Jody Dean, a pilot participant from Hamilton. The pilot didn't end well because Doug Ford's government decided to end it abruptly. Doug Ford took over the Ontario government late June 2018, and in early August they scrapped it, leaving 4,000 participants in need without promised assistance. The pilot was designed by Hugh Siegel, a conservative political strategist, former senator, former chief of staff to Ontario Premier Bill Davis, and later to Canadian Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. Mr. Siegel recently published a book called Bootstraps Need Boots, about his fight for universal basic income in Canada that started over 50 years ago. Then, in 2018, came the call from Kathleen Wynne.
The most important thing about a pilot is that it should not bring with it a bias. It should not be structured to prove that the idea is always going to be perfect. It should be structured to test whether the idea is in fact better than what we're doing now. Better in terms of results, better in terms of cost, better in terms of commitment to the labor force and to educational and healthcare outcomes.
How did it play out?
Well, we don't know. Here's what we do know. We know that research has been done in the Hamilton area by the Department of Economics at McMaster University, where they were able to follow quite a large amount of recipients of the pilot. And what they found was all the results that one would have hoped. In other words, people were using the money, the guarantee money, to go and get better education so they could improve their job prospects. Some were using it to hire child care so they could do more work themselves and earn more money for themselves and their family. Some were using the money to start a small business, which they felt they could benefit from and give them some financial independence. There were some individuals, one particular woman I recall, who went and bought at the age of 47 her first new winter coat ever because of the extra top-up. So, you know, those results indicated that the project was heading in the right direction, but because the project stopped prematurely, they were only able to get the results of 1 year.
But then came Ontario elections in 2018.
During the election, interestingly enough, all three parties, including Mr. Ford's party, took the position that they were going to wait to see, after the 3 years of the pilot were completed, what the results were, and then they would come to a decision based on the actual results of the pilot. The NDP made that commitment. Certainly the Liberals, it was their program, they were committed to that. And when Ford became the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, and he was asked by the Toronto Star, his campaign was asked whether they were going to continue the program, their official spokesman said twice that yes, they liked the idea of the pilot, they found it interesting, and they would wait to see the results before they made any decisions. So, sadly, when they got elected, they did not keep that promise, and they canceled the program right away.
If we had universal basic income, how different would the COVID-19 situation
play out? Well, here's what we know. We know that, generally speaking, your prior health condition is a determinant of the risk that you face from COVID-19, number one. So those people who are already living in poverty are more susceptible to a worst-case scenario. So therefore, if there are less people living in poverty, we'd have less people susceptible, number one. Number two, we know that the results of the COVID-19 and the public health officer's advice has been that we have to shut down all non-essential businesses, which produced, on, you know, literally over a period of a couple of weeks, 7 million new unemployed Canadians. The government of Canada determined that they couldn't just rely on the old employment insurance system, the EI system, because it too was very convoluted and very complex, and it required either algorithmic decision making or individual case management, which would have taken too long. So the existing systems were found to be creaky and unable to get money to people in time. I support the fact that the government of Canada, through the Bank of Canada, moved quickly to make sure that the banks and the large financial institutions had the liquidity they needed, the cash they needed to manage through this difficult time. I don't oppose any of that. And that was done very quickly. That was literally done overnight. The notion that you could do that for the big players and have no answer for the instant liquidity needs of regular folk who find themselves without a job and without any income makes no sense to me at all. And so if we had a basic income in place as it was envisaged in the pilot, individuals could have simply gone online to CRA and say, my income used to be $42,000 a year. It's now zero because of what's happened. And therefore, I qualify for the basic income. And they could have put the money in their bank account within days, the way they did for the CERB recipients, a program which had to be cobbled together quickly. I give the government great credit for having done so. But if we had a basic income structure across the country now, then we would have had that infrastructure in place, which would have produced probably a more efficient and a more humane way of making sure that people were not without necessary cash, and it would have been part of the income security system.
This was Hugh Siegel, former senator who designed the Ontario Basic Income Pilot Project. We'll publish the entire interview with him in one of the following episodes. Now, after Kitchener's initiative, we asked both federal and provincial government for an interview about the initiative itself and the future of universal basic income. And the federal government never responded to our email, and provincial government sent us written statement that goes like this, quote, "These are unprecedented times that are having an impact on all Ontarians. As part of its action plan to respond to COVID-19, the government announced $7 billion in additional resources for the healthcare sector and to provide direct support for people and jobs. The government is also making $10 billion available in support for people and businesses through tax credits and deferrals. Measures the ministry has put in place to support individuals and families include expanding access to temporary emergency assistance for those in financial crisis with no access to other supports, expanding access to discretionary benefits for those receiving social assistance, and providing direction to social assistance offices to ensure people can keep much more of the Canada Emergency Response Benefit than they would have under normal circumstances. We are also providing $148 million to municipalities and other organizations that provide social services. This flexible funding is helping shelters, food banks, charities, and nonprofits improve their ability to respond to COVID-19 and cope with growing demands. Outside of this work, we remain focused on improving social assistance and employment programs so that everyone who is able can contribute to the success of our province and reach their potential. We are focused on solutions for Ontario that are practical and sustainable. We are unable to comment further as this matter is subject to ongoing litigation." End quote. This was the response of Ministry of Community and Social Services of Ontario to our questions about Kitchener's initiative and the future of universal basic income. The litigation they are mentioning is a $200 million class action of several pilot participants from Lindsay against the Ontario government. The case is ongoing. Now, I'm guessing that the crucial part of their response was that they're focused on solutions that are practical and sustainable, which I'm guessing means that the current Ontario government thinks that universal basic income idea is not practical nor sustainable. Having all of that in mind, we asked all the people we interviewed the same question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are they that we'll see a universal basic income in Canada anytime soon?
Well,
Bill Ioannidis, Kitchener councillor.
I don't know exactly. I think if we start seeing the pandemic in second waves coming about, and we see more unemployment and more desperation because of a second wave, then I could see it definitely being looked at a lot more serious than it is right now.
Hugh Siegel, who designed the Ontario pilot.
I would say I used to be somewhere around 4 or 5. I'm now in the 8 area because I think that this particular event that we are going through now, the COVID virus thing, where all of a sudden 7 million hardworking Canadians who had jobs and were earning a reasonable salary, and some were in hospitality, some were artists, and some were freelancers, and some were working on projects, but all of them ended up without any income. I think there's now a much greater understanding in Canada of how people can end up in poverty through no fault of their own, that poverty is not reflective of a moral failure on the part of those who are poor. Often it's a reflection of circumstances beyond their control.
Jesse Golem, pilot participant.
That's a good question. I know that, like, on the world stage, the basic income movement in Canada is one of the strongest movements in the world. And there are people who are very much basic income advocates from all over the world. And I've had the extreme honor and privilege of getting to meet some of those people. I'd like to think that it will come through, and I'd like to believe in Canada. We are the country that brought forward universal health care. We are, like, that strong and innovative and of a country that I believe that we can do this. I don't know. I want to be optimistic, and I would like to say, like, let's say 7 or 8, just because I need to have a healthy dose of skepticism in there. But I do believe that a basic income should absolutely be a part of our future. Especially with COVID-19, the world that we are going to enter into past this pandemic will be a different normal. It will not be the same as it was before. And I don't want it to be the same as it was before.
Jody Dean, another pilot participant.
I think that we will eventually see a basic income. I mean, Canada is known to have the first two basic incomes already in forms that show that they it works with child tax credit and old age security. Those things show that universal basic income works. I know for me, the stress that I was under worrying about money was definitely lifted, which of course makes for a happy, healthier environment. I have a million stresses with a special needs child. Like, the money portion of it was one I really didn't need on top of that. So I'd like to say that I see it, my personal feeling, that I see it happen, like Sir Ben's, and they've implemented basic income. I just don't have a lot of confidence. But again, you know, I am a basic income pilot participant who gave the government the trust that this was going to run its course. And without any care, the government ripped it from underneath. So I guess maybe I have a little bit of mistrust.
You've been listening to CKMS Newsroom at 102.7 FM. Check out the archived versions of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo, and you can email news@radiowaterloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover. The music was Black Room by Moby, thanks to MobyGratis.com. My name is Ivan Angelovsky, and I was your host for this program.